Welcome into Locked On Nets. I'm your host, Marcus Barahal, and on today's show, I will recap the biggest win of the season for the Brooklyn Nets over the Sacramento Kings. That incredible comeback in the fourth quarter, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson's miracle shot, D'Angelo Russell's heroics, all of it, I'll break it all down. Plus, in segment three, I've got a special guest, Ally Melendez, the in-arena host for the Long Island Nets, will join me to talk about her career and her experience working with the Nets organization. All that and more coming up.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Locked On Nets, segment one. I'm your host, Marcus Barahal. As I mentioned earlier, Josh will not be joining me. He is traveling for work. It's 12:32 a.m. as I record this, and wow. I mean, that was probably the most impressive comeback I've ever seen in my entire life. First things first, going to be completely honest, I started writing a rundown for this podcast probably midway through the third quarter. Things did not seem good. I had a whole tease written about the Nets getting blitzed, about Sacramento's impressive young front court with Marvin Bagley and Harry Giles, who had great games. I'm sure I'll get into that eventually. I scrapped it all. That was just an incredible comeback from Brooklyn. I'm kind of going off script here. I had a whole thing planned, but obviously D'Angelo Russell decided to throw away my entire rundown. He saw me typing up my preview, I guess, and he decided, you know what, Josh isn't here. Let's test Marcus. Let's see how invested he really is in this team. And I mean, I honestly, I don't know what to say. I'm at a loss for words. That was so impressive. And it started with a weird lineup change, because this comeback was from a five-man lineup that I don't know that I've ever seen Kenny Atkinson go to, at least in the time that I've been watching the Nets, which has been since mid-December when I took over this podcast from Gavin, and kind of Josh has sort of showed me like what the Nets like to do, what their lineups typically look like, and this was definitely not it. It was D'Angelo Russell, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Jared Dudley, Rodions Kurucs, and Travion Graham was the five that kind of led this comeback when the Nets trailed by 28 at one point, or at multiple points actually, and trailed by 25 entering the fourth quarter. They wind up completing this comeback victory, a 123-121 victory over the Sacramento Kings, highlighted, of course, by that buzzer beater at the very end, or not buzzer beater, but with 0.8 seconds left, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson throws in a reverse layup over Marvin Bagley to give the Nets a two-point lead and the win. Brooklyn outscored Sacramento 45-18 in the fourth quarter, which is, that's absurd. Russell had 44 points on 33 shots. He also had 12 assists in this game. He had four steals. He was unreal. He showed why he's an all-star, and he was clearly the best player on the court for either team in this game. He played 38 minutes, which I have to imagine, if it's not a season high, it's got to be somewhere close given how Kenny Atkinson likes to do his rotations. I mean, you can see the impact that certain guys had just looking at the box score and just looking at the plus-minus. Jared Dudley and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and Travion Graham all were over plus 20, and Russell and Rodions Kurucs both plus 13. Everyone else on Brooklyn was a negative while they were in, which is pretty emblematic of how the first half went. I guess I'll start there. Brooklyn started off decently. They were pretty much even with the Kings starters the first few minutes of the game. And I thought that Sacramento starters, particularly Nemanja Bjelica, didn't really look like they could keep up with Brooklyn's foot speed and everything. But then the game kind of shifted when the Kings went to Marvin Bagley and Harry Giles as a tandem for their front court, because those guys, there's like a lot of talk in the NBA now, I guess, about playing small, and I think that's kind of misguided. I think it's more about playing skillfully and having guys who aren't one-dimensional. And so when you have a guy like Marvin Bagley, who is legit, like he has size and strength, and he has the ability to shoot from the outside, as he showed in this game. He hit a couple of threes. He was 2-for-2 on threes, and obviously he was hitting pretty much everything else. He was 12-of-15 for the game. When you have that kind of offensive versatility paired with Harry Giles, who has incredible foot speed and just looks like he's really back from his injury, he looked really good. Those two guys together, I thought, just kind of bullied the Nets inside and kind of could get wherever they wanted, especially because it seemed like Brooklyn didn't really have an answer for both of them. Like, Ed Davis was doing a decent job, I thought, when it came to guarding either one of those guys, whoever he wound up being matched up with. But then whoever the four-man was, I thought Rhodey did a decent job defensively, but whether it was Damari Carroll or... I guess it was really just Damari Carroll, because the Nets didn't... They only played eight guys in the first half, so they didn't have a super deep rotation. And Carroll was just kind of getting eaten up. Like, it wasn't really his fault. It's just a tough matchup, given Carroll's age and given, like I mentioned, just the pure size and skill of both Bagley and Harry Giles. So what I was thinking was that, like, Rhodey was going to have a big game. I wrote that down in my notes, just seeing how effective those guys were being. I thought he would have to play a lot, which he did. He played 33 minutes, and he'd have to play well, which he did. It's just that I obviously did not see Rondae Hollis-Jefferson turning in his, clearly his best game of the season, maybe his best game, like, in a long time, and Jared Dudley chipping in, playing, I think, the whole fourth quarter, and hitting a couple big threes, and playing incredible defensively. Him and Rondae, their communication on the court, on the defensive end of the floor, was unreal, and just seeing the way that they boxed out and the way that they fought for every loose ball, you could tell that those guys have stayed ready on the bench, and they've kind of been waiting for this opportunity for the whole season, and for the last couple weeks especially, when they've been out of the rotation, partially due to, in Rondae's case, poor play, and in Dudley's case, just getting injured at the wrong time. But those guys clearly stayed ready, which is a credit to them, and a credit to the Nets coaching staff and system, and just kind of like that whole culture that they've developed, because they felt like, it felt like those guys knew that they would have an opportunity. Maybe they didn't know it would come in this game, but I feel like they knew that they would have their time. And in that little post-game, like, Michael Grady came out and interviewed Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and D'Angelo Russell. When the guys came out and, like, poured the water on Rondae and kind of were celebrating him, you could hear D'Angelo Russell off mic saying to Rondae, "You deserve this, you deserve this." And he said some other language that I won't repeat on the podcast, a little colorful. But it's clear that those guys love Rondae. D'Lo called him the heart and soul of the team when he was talking to Michael Grady. And we know how much they love Dudley. And it's just really nice to see those guys get a moment. And there's no other way to phrase it other than this was the biggest win of the season. My emotions are still riding high. So I'm going to take a quick break. I'm going to be back in segment two to talk more about the game. I just need to gather my thoughts. This is just such an impressive win. So I'll be back. Stay tuned. Did you know you can fill out a tourney bracket at DraftKings this year? That's right. DraftKings, the leader in daily fantasy sports, has a totally free bracket with tens of thousands of dollars up for grabs. Everyone fills out a bracket during the tourney, so you might as well do it on an award-winning app with tons of free prizes. And for the first time ever, DraftKings is offering a bracket battle promotion with $64,000 in prizes. I know you want a piece of that, so get in on it. Maybe you think UNC will make the Final Four like I do. Or maybe you like being wrong and you're picking Kentucky. I won't hold it against you. We all know how brackets work. Before tip-off of the first game, just pick all the winners for every round. And you can even play for free with the code DRIBBLE. You can set up a free, private group for you and your friends to compete for bragging rights. So download the DraftKings app or head to DraftKings.com now. Like right now. Go! I'll wait. Use code DRIBBLE to enter the bracket battle promotion free and to compete for your share of that $64,000. I might get in on that also, so you'll be competing against me. That's code DRIBBLE to compete in the bracket battle for free. Only at DraftKings, the game inside the game. All right, Locked On Nets, segment two here. I think I've calmed down a little bit. I've caught my breath. Hopefully, I'll have to listen back to that first segment, I guess, but I'm sure I was talking a mile a minute, so sorry about that, but I just got caught up in the excitement and the moment of it all. That was just such an impressive win by Brooklyn, as I said, probably about 100 times. So I'm going to break it down a little bit further here just to kind of get into what I like to talk about, which is like the schematic adjustments that Kenny made and that the players made, I think, more importantly. D'Angelo Russell, obviously, career-high 44 points. This was his third, I believe, 40-plus point game on the road this season, which is really impressive, just showing that he can kind of take his game wherever he goes, and he almost thrives in a way being the villain, being the guy that the crowd is like booing or maybe like rooting against. And obviously he plays well at home also, but he seems like the kind of guy who just kind of he's a performer in a way, and he feeds off that. We see it in the ice in the veins celebration and all that. So he definitely stepped his game up, obviously. And the biggest difference for him, and I noticed in the first half, it just really burst through in the second half was his driving to the basket. And Josh and I have talked about how the biggest hole in D'Angelo Russell's game, from our perspective at least, is his ability to get to the line. Now, he didn't shoot a ton of free throws in this game. He was 4 of 6, but when we say his ability to get to the line, I think what we're more talking about is his willingness to drive all the way to the basket and look to score with power rather than finesse all the time. You know, he's great at the floaters and he has a really nice touch in the mid-range, and he's gotten a lot better as a passer, as we've talked about. So a lot of the time when he drives in and he kicks out or he floats it up over the top, those are fine decisions and they work out a lot of the time. But it's just a matter of becoming too predictable with that. So if the defense is playing you to float it up or they're playing you to pass, you have to be able to counter it. And I thought he did a really, really nice job in this game of kind of weaving his way into the paint and then looking to score the basketball by just going right at guys. And it started with when the Kings kind of were almost like, we have this game won, and they put in Yogi Ferrell for only 4 minutes, but he just could not guard D'Angelo Russell. And it was still like a 20-ish point game at that point. Like, it was at least a 20-point lead for the Kings at that point. But when Ferrell was out there, I was thinking, like, I don't think he should be on the court unless Shabazz Napier's on the court for Brooklyn, because it, and obviously Napier's hurt, but just like someone of that size, because Ferrell's just too small to guard either Dinwiddie or Russell. And I think Russell happened to be the guy on the court, so he took advantage of it. But correctly, he was like backing him down, working his way inside and taking a lot of contact. And he, I think that helped boost his confidence, thinking, okay, like, I can finish on this team. And the Kings, as I mentioned, they're a really athletic team, and they're a team that plays with a lot of pace also. So they have size and they have speed, but they don't have a ton of rim protection. Willie Cauley-Stein is probably their best interior defender, but he's a little bit flat-footed. He's not as athletic as he used to be, which is weird because he's still pretty young. He only played 19 minutes in this game, and I thought Bagley and Giles were just clearly better than him. Bielitsa, not as good defensively, but he brings shooting, obviously, that Willie Trill doesn't. So I guess he still should have a role in the rotation. But I thought Willie Cauley-Stein was probably the worst big man in the Kings' rotation, in this game at least. So I thought that it made sense for Russell to kind of just keep attacking until the Kings proved that they could stop it, and that's exactly what he did. He was getting inside first and starting his offense looking to score from the inside first, and then obviously he started hitting the threes later on in the game, and he wound up 6 for 15 from three, which is, that might not sound impressive, but that's really good. I mean, that's 40% from three, because that's 6 for 15, you multiply that out, that's 40%. So while it seems like, oh, he missed 9 threes, he was splashing them when it mattered, and he hit enough to justify taking the amount he did, and probably even more, honestly. But my main point here is that his three-point shot in this game was set up by his driving, because the Kings saw him getting into the paint at will, and so you have to kind of take a step back to prevent the drive, and then that opens up the three. It's in the past, not in the last game necessarily, but in the past few games, we've kind of seen him chucking up shots a little bit, him and Dinwiddie, to be fair. Dinwiddie probably more so than Russell, but it's just been a little bit forced, and Dinwiddie was still forcing it a little bit in this game. He came in for like a second on that one defensive possession at the very end of the fourth quarter, Dinwiddie did, and he looked fine there, but he was not himself in this game, I don't think. I'm not sure if it's the injury or if he's just in a slump the last game or two. But Russell, just having that inside presence set up his outside presence, I think is what it comes down to, because the getting into the paint and finishing layups, that's going to be more consistent, I think, than his jumper. As good as his jumper is, if he can get to the basket and he can either finish or draw a foul, that's going to be a way more reliable and sustainable form of offense than the rainbow threes, which when they are going in, it's great, but when they're not, it's obviously, it can be a struggle. And he's such an important part and an integral part of this Nets offense that they kind of need him to be more consistent, which he hit, to his credit, he's done. It's just that in these last couple games, notwithstanding the Clippers game, he's kind of struggled to play a full game with that offensive consistency, and he did that so, so well in this game. Obviously, he's not going to score 44 points every game. Obviously, he's not going to have 12 assists every single game. It's more about the mentality and the willingness to drive and attack that I think is so important. But before I get too carried away giving all the credit to D'Angelo Russell, who was, I mean, he earned all the credit, to be fair, but guys like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and Jared Dudley deserve a ton of props in this game. Rondae obviously hit that last game-winning basket. And Josh and I have been hard on him the last couple of months as he's kind of fallen out of favor in the rotation, and he's lost a lot of his minutes either to Graham or to Rhodey getting a bump in playing time. But he was phenomenal in this game. There were still times at the end of the game where he had the ball because the Kings were kind of pressuring Russell in the backcourt, so Rondé had to kind of be that guy, or Graham at certain points, to bring the ball up the court. And it was, frankly, it was nerve-wracking seeing Rondé just kind of barrel in and stumble in. But for all that, he brought on the offensive end that was like a little bit nervous or shaky, like having the energy and the tenacity and the focus that he brought on the defensive end made it so worth it. He really contained Bagley on the offensive glass, particularly at the end of the game. And it was just his willingness to kind of go in there. And I think part of the willingness was just because he hasn't been playing. And obviously he's a guy that's always been scrappy. He's always been willing to fight for loose balls and all that stuff. But I think not playing has kind of just made him like reevaluate his standing in the league and with the team. Like, obviously he's the longest tenured net at this point. And as D'Angelo Russell said, he's the heart and soul of the team. So the guys kind of look to him as like a veteran guy. But at a certain point, it's like with Jared Dudley, where if you're not actually playing minutes, it's hard to kind of take your word to the same degree as you would someone who is playing more. So I think having this moment for him is big, and it's big for the team, because now you can kind of look to him as a guy who, it's not a guy who used to do this, it's a guy who is still doing this right now. Rondé played a really nice game. And Jared Dudley hit two big shots. He put the Nets ahead with a three off a really, really nice pass from D'Angelo Russell. It wasn't anything special, but it was just that Russell was really red hot, obviously, and he was feeling it. I think he had scored something like 14 straight points for Brooklyn at that point, and the Kings sent a double team to him on the wing, leaving Dudley open at the top of the key. And Russell did not force it up. He swung it to Dudley, the open man, the correct basketball play. Dudley hit the shot, and it was perfect. That's exactly what you want. You want your all-star to do a lot of the scoring, and then when the defense says, okay, we have to stop this guy, you want him to have the self-awareness to kick it out to a teammate who's open, and then for that teammate to knock it down, all the better. But either way, that's good process. And just shout out to Jared Dudley. I know we talk about him a lot on the podcast. He's kind of a favorite of Josh and mine. He's a coach on the floor. I mean, you could see it in the last possession, in the last couple possessions, him just kind of standing, even if he's not involved in the play, he's directing traffic, he's coordinating the inbounds, he's talking on defense, he's telling guys where to be. So he's invaluable. I think the big question now, I mean, the Nets are 37-36. This was a massive, massive win. They've got another very winnable game on Friday against the Lakers to try to push this to 38-36. But the big question for me now is how the rotation shakes out after this, because Rondé, 6-for-7 from the field, 14 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, and a block in 17 minutes. He filled it up, and he was super impactful, like we talked about. It felt like he might have earned another shot here, and I'm sure Josh, if he was here, would probably say that I'm overreacting. This is one game, but he looked really good, and I talked about on my last solo podcast that when Carroll was out, just speculating on how I would want the minutes to be broken down between Rondé and Dudley with Carroll out of the game, I said that I would want Dudley if it was a close game because of his experience and his basketball IQ on the court. But if it was a blowout, I would want Rondé out there to kind of be a possible spark. And that's exactly what Kenny Atkinson did in this game. So, Kenny, thank you for listening to the podcast and for taking my advice. Clearly, it worked out. That's clearly why you did what you did by playing Rondé. But, yeah, I think there's a spot for Rondé is, I guess, my point. So I'm sure Josh and I will debate that when he's back. But coming up in segment three, I recorded this earlier today before all this craziness, and actually, in this interview coming up, I mentioned that I'm not fully converted to a Nets fan yet. I might have to reevaluate that after this game, because this was really special, and I will remember this game for a long time. So, segment three, I will get into my interview with Ali Melendez, who was really fun to talk to, and I know her. I've known her now for a few months, just through work stuff, and she is super nice, super generous with her time, very humble, and just really fun to be around. So, looking forward to playing that for you guys coming up in segment three. Welcome back to Locked On Nets. Segment three here. Segment three, as I like to say, is it's where we get freaky. So I brought in a special guest, First time on the pod. She is the in-arena host for the Long Island Nets. She's also worked with the Brooklyn Nets, recently did the A-10 conference tournament in Barclays Center. Allie Melendez, the great Allie Melendez, is here. How are you, Allie?
Wow. First of all, thank you so much for having me on your show, and good job memorizing all the
Thank you. That was all off the cuff.
I've done.
I have a little note here of like questions, but the intro was not part of it.
You are so professional. Yeah, thanks for having me on. I love this. This is great.
Appreciate it. So first off, I just have to ask for the listeners out there. They know that I'm not a Nets fan, but my co-host Josh is. So I just want to ask, did you grow up a Nets fan? It's okay if you didn't. I just want full transparency.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely going to be honest. I grew up a Knicks fan.
Same.
Yep, and I went to a bunch of Knicks games growing up. And in high school, I went with my friends as often as we could afford it because, you know, we weren't spending money on food and driving the way we are now. But, yeah, it was great. I loved it. And then I remember going through the whole insanity thing with them. And then it was weird because when I started working for the Nets, it was different. Like, I got a whole different side of basketball that I never had experienced before, and it was really cool. And then I learned more about the business, and I was like, okay, I'm kind of starting to become a Nets fan just because of the business and all of that stuff. And then I met, you know, Jeremy Lin, who was on the Nets, and I was like, whoa, that's weird too.
So you're more of like a Jeremy Lin fan,
I was. Now he's not on the Nets, you know, as you know, but
he's a Toronto Raptor. maybe a Raptors fan now.
But it was just funny because, you know, I just feel like a lot of people made, I don't know, like they made the switch too, whether it was from one team to another. But now I'm sorry to say the Knicks are not doing
really They're very bad. They're the worst team in the league.
So bad. So, and the Nets are actually doing great. So not only am I proud to say that I work for the Nets, but I'm proud to say that I am a Nets fan now. So.
Wow. So it can happen to the listeners out there. Maybe one day I will be converted full time.
Yeah.
Allie, one of the most impressive things about the Nets this season is the energy from their bench, guys like Theo Pinson, Mitch Creek, Alan Williams, guys who kind of started in Long Island, which is the team that you're more familiar with. So, like, I guess my question is, did you see that energy there? And, like, does the team in Long Island have that same camaraderie and togetherness that the Brooklyn team does? Because I think a lot of Nets fans aren't as familiar maybe with the Long Island Nets.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm not even just saying this because I work with them and I work alongside them, but they are such a strong family. And it's so funny because I interviewed each and every one of them, got to know their personalities and like this bit that we did, whatever, as a team before the season started. And I was like, this is so interesting. They're just guys like my age. They're just normal guys like that I, you know, are just like some of my college friends and some of the guys I grew up with. And we just had such a fun time, like just talking like normal people and really being authentic and finding what made us relatable in our demographics and our age, but also finding what was so different about all of them and all their backgrounds. And, you know, Mitch Creek is from Australia, and we have, you know, a bunch of players not actually from America.
John and Musa.
Yeah, exactly. And it was just wonderful seeing them being so close and using their differences to even make them closer. And especially throughout the season, I love that Dazen Musa and Alan, the Big Sauce Williams, they have this the best like handshake when they are being announced.
Right.
And every time our Nets guy, who's Tony, he's like, and Alan Big Sauce Williams. And then they just do this like crazy handshake. I live for it because I know that they're just genuinely being friends. And Shannon Scott, he's a big goofball. So yeah, they're really wonderful, authentic people, and their energy on and off the court is without a doubt authentic.
So. Yeah, I think that's a big thing with like the Brooklyn Nets also, like guys like Spencer Dinwiddie or Joe Harris. Like Josh and I have talked about, like Joe Harris was like on a podcast that we listened to, The Low Post, and the guy who hosts that like couldn't go to meet Joe Harris, and he lived in Queens, and Joe Harris was in Brooklyn, and Joe Harris just texted him, was like, it's fine, like I'll just take the G train up.
Yeah.
That's like such a normal person thing, like you wouldn't think a professional athlete would
do that. They're such normal people.
Yeah, they're real humans, I guess.
Yeah, and even the Brooklyn Nets team, I was able to meet some of them. I didn't speak to all of them, but the few that I was able to speak to, so down to earth, because we went to the Dave & Buster's, I hosted the VIP season ticket holder event,
right.
And they were just playing games with all their fans. They were just playing games, they were taking pictures, like talking, like it was just so funny to see them off the court and not so serious, dressed in jeans and a hoodie, like normal people, and people you know, their fans who idolize them on the court, was just able to have conversations with them. And I think keeping that, keeping it so real is just, like, the best part about being a Nets fan, too.
Yeah, that's definitely been, like, a big part of the Nets' success is, like, their chemistry and stuff. Do you have a favorite, not to put you on the spot, a favorite Net that you've interacted with either from Brooklyn or from Long Island? Maybe not even someone who's still on the team, just one person who jumps out to you?
Well, I'll always, when I'm on the court, I say hi to, like, I'll high-five some of the guys that are coming on the court as I go off the court. We're just like, hey, what's up? And, let's see. Drew Gordon was one of them. He got injured, though, but he and I had, like, a close rapport. And then, I guess, on the Brooklyn Nets, Rodion Krutz is actually very sweet, and I've had a couple conversations with him. Yeah, I guess, even though I don't know, you know, any of them personally, he would be the one that I guess I know a little bit personally.
He's younger.
Yeah, and our interactions are just so normal. Just like, hey, what's up? How are you enjoying your day? Whatever. And it's like, I'm just talking to one of the best guys on the Nets.
Right.
But yeah, I think Rodion's Krutz is, just because I've talked to him the most, is probably one of my favorite.
Nice.
Yeah.
So also I mentioned that you did the A-10 tournament, which was in Barclays Center, so some Nets fans might have been at that. I know March Madness is obviously starting, like, pretty much right now. Mentioned it in an ad read earlier in this podcast. So do you have any stories about that? Was that different from the professional games that you've done, or was it similar? Do you have any sleeper teams, maybe, from that that you saw that you liked?
Oh, my God, yeah. I have answers for all of this.
Sure.
So what made it different was that we're not always televised in the G League. Sometimes we're on Facebook Live, sometimes we're on ESPN Plus, but we're not. When we are on Yes Network, our timeouts are a little different. You know, we have, like, the media timeouts. But this was very, I'm not someone who's always on the script. You know what I mean? Like, I like to do my own thing. I like to feel the energy from the fans and who I'm really interacting with and just get a feel for them and kind of just talk like myself.
Yeah, you're
like,
a real person.
I don't like to stick to the book. Exactly. I don't always do that. So it's funny because having to stick to the book for A10 was like, oh, I really have to memorize certain things because of the time limit that I have with timeouts, with contests, with whatever. And then to the point where it was getting a little repetitive with some of the ads I had to, like, just memorize.
Yeah.
But, like, it was kind of good because she was like, oh, Allie, go in 3, 2, 1. And I would just be like, Geico, you know, so, like,
not an official sponsor.
No, Geico, no. But it was good and bad, you know. It was like I got to experience what it was really like to have those official media timeouts. And I think that's good experience on my part because timing is always so important, especially with what I do. You have to be on time with everything. And then also just kind of being like, all right, I need to be on my feet with certain things. I can't memorize everything, but I need to keep it in the time zone. So that was cool. Just being able to improvise professionally, I guess, is something I like to get experience doing. And as far as sleeper teams, George Mason was one of my favorite, and I'll tell you why. The team itself, they were good, but it was the band and the conductor that made my whole experience. Like, I was dancing so hard with George Mason, man. They had singers. They had rappers. Their conductor was a pimp, and he had a pimp cane that he, like, conducted with, and I was like, whoa, this energy. Like, I'm vibing off this energy right now. I'll show you a video after of the George Mason band.
That's for after the podcast.
But shout out to them. I had never, like, seen them play anything, but I'm not too familiar with the school. And after, like, talking to some of the band members and stuff, I was like, they're really cool. They're just they just have a whole totally different style with
Yeah, having a rapper is interesting, because I feel
rapper,
like,
singers.
Yeah, like, college bands are usually, like, big bands that are playing just, like, the same, like,
into
bah, bah,
bah,
bah,
bah,
it. But yeah, this
yeah,
seems
yeah.
like it was more modern, I guess.
So yeah, so George Mason,
keep your eye on their band, people.
Was definitely one of my favorites. George Washington was good, too. I like their mascot.
Awesome. Well, Allie, thank you for joining me. Is there anything you want to plug before we go? Anything at all? Your Twitter, maybe?
Oh,
Instagram?
Oh, sure. You could follow me on Instagram at Allie.Melendez. I also have Allie Melendez Media, where I post a lot of rewards.
That account doesn't follow
promos.
Me back, I'll say.
Oh,
that's fine.
See, I follow you on my personal, though, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
there you go.
That's true.
You guys can follow whatever. I try to just follow, like, production companies
fair.
And jobs
yeah.
that I have. All right, well, now I feel now I'm going to have to do it. Now for the podcast, people, I'm going to have to do
Listeners
it.
Out there, please hold her to this. Just check who's following me after this podcast.
That's it. So, yeah. Go ahead. Go see a little glimpse into my life on those platforms and let me know what you think.
For sure.
Unless you don't like it, then don't.
Allie, thanks for joining me. Listeners out there, if you go to a Long Island Nets game, say hi to her. Tell her Locked On Nets. We're fans. If you happen to see her at a Nets game, say hello. She's very nice. Allie, thanks again.
Yes, thanks so much.
So that was my interview with Allie Melendez. Just wanted to wrap up afterwards by giving you guys some quick plugs and just thanking Allie again for coming on. Obviously, she's the in-arena host for the Long Island Nets, but she has done work with the Brooklyn Nets and has worked closely with a lot of the guys that have kind of made this Nets culture what it is, as we talked about, you know, guys like Theo Pinson, Mitch Creek, John and Musa, Alan Williams, just those like real culture guys, those bench guys that have kind of brought an energy and a celebratory attitude to Brooklyn. So great to talk to her. Hope you guys enjoyed that. You can follow me on Twitter at Marcus Barahal. You can follow Josh at JMBass_. Follow us both at Locked On Nets on Twitter. And until next time, Josh and I will speak to you. Be well. Bye.